Good evening. Welcome, everyone, to the Simple Actions group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Morgan, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Morgan.
Hello. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God
grant you the serenity to accept the things that cannot change, the courage to change the things that can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. They are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. This evening, we are discussing step 11, which is sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And please welcome our panel, Paul and Nick.
That's a good one. Appreciate you.
All right, this is like the most awkward setup because everybody's.
Can we shift?
Yeah, can we shift?
So
I'm
weird
freaking
looking
out.
Through you.
Thank you. I'm like. I don't want all eyes on me, but if I can't see you guys looking at me, I'm freaking out. I don't know why. All right. There we go.
Oh, hey, everybody.
There we go. That's where everybody's
been.
Here we are. All right. The first reading is going to be on page 85. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. It would be easy to be vague about this manner. Yet, we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? But we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken.
Which one?
All right. Hey, everybody. My name is Paul, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
hello. Quick plug. AA 101 is my home group. It meets. Yep, we're all here. It meets in the hospital right across the way at 11 o'clock on Sundays. Super hard to find. Just get in the hospital. We have people peppered around. We'll find you. bringing to the message. It's a good time. Anyways, man, step 11. I thought this step was so worthless. I really did. Well, because I did step 9 and I felt better about myself. And then I wanted to get immediately into helping other people because I thought that I was going to be the salvation of these folks. And I was like, you know, 10, 11, sure. And I'll just keep moving. And it was really misguided. I'm going to be honest with you. It was awful. I guess just to preface, I drank from a very early age. The first time I drank, I blacked out. And that's pretty much what happened consistently over a bunch of years. I'm really not interested in just having a couple drinks. Even when I am interested in just having a couple drinks, I start and then I don't really know what's going to happen. At most of the time, I black out and pee somewhere weird. That's just what it is. I know. And so anyways, when I came in here, I was convinced that I couldn't drink again. But I was super convinced that I had all the answers, right? And so I knew I couldn't drink, but I thought I still had it. I got it. And it wasn't until sitting a year in AA, not doing anything, that I really had a true freak out and my alcoholism really came out. At some point, alcohol had become the solution for me to my sober feelings. I generally dislike being sober because I hate myself. I definitely hate you guys. And I think I'm superior, but I know that I'm not. And, when you vacillate in between that, I am just free. I know it's a good word. I am freaking out constantly. So I pour alcohol all over that and I feel normal. That's when my shoulders drop. That's when I can be at ease, right? And so at some point, that just became the reflex. And when I didn't have that, what do I do? I'm left with myself. I'm left with the real issue, which is my selfishness and self-centeredness and self-seeking just goes through the roof, right? Just through the roof. I don't care about anybody. And I stomp all over people and I use them and I treat them like garbage. And so after a year of doing that, just sitting in AA, I finally decided that maybe I should do something about this. And that wasn't even my decision. It was my wife screaming at me because she had gone to Al-Anon and hit me in the head with a can of hairspray. I was bleeding profusely and she screamed, "Shouldn't you be doing something?" She's always right. So anyways, she's always. And so, so when I started doing this program, I really got after it until I felt good enough. And then I stopped. And then I would get in some pain and I would do another step. And it just took me like a year to get through the steps. And I'm not proud of that. That's just the truth of it. I wish I could tell you I came in and hit the ground running and just like a free bird. Woo, there he goes. But I struggled a lot in my sobriety with the pain of inaction. And I'm really like, I'm glad that I did because that really showed me what my life looks like when I'm not doing this thing. I have a full knowledge of that. and especially with this praying piece. The reason I'm telling you all this stuff is because if I had just had a drinking problem and I stopped drinking, I'd be cured. That's not what happens for me. I feel everything worse. Everything gets turned up to 12. I hate you more. I hate me more. I'm better than you. You're worse than me. You're better than me. I start losing it. And I didn't know that that was the main piece of the problem. I didn't know that I had a brain that was always going to work me into a tizzy, so I needed alcohol to calm that thing. I didn't know that. And so when it was suggested that I pray, I didn't do it. I don't know why. I guess I'm just a petulant child. I think that I'm better than you and I know better than you. And I just didn't pray. I had in my mind, and I know this sounds really dumb and please forgive me, but I had in my mind that I was going to, like, if I got on my knees, it was going to be like an ISIS video or something. I know that sounds extreme, but I really felt like I was not going to prostrate before something else. I really was stubborn about it, and I was like, maybe I'll sit on the edge of the bed and ask you for stuff. And, I guess we'll get into it, and I'm losing myself a little bit, and I apologize about that, but, when I went through a lot of years sober, helping other people and trying my best, and that was okay, but it got to a point where I was really having a very hollow experience in AA, and I was like, is this it? Like, I don't want to drink again, but this kind of sucks. I don't like being sober-ish. And I didn't realize that prayer and growing that side of my program would give me the release from the selfishness and self-centeredness and self-seeking and allow me to see other people in the world other than just myself. I'm like that creature from Alien that just like sucked to my own face. I just think about myself. And I didn't realize how problematic that was because I couldn't even see it. But once I started doing this thing, once I started praying on a regular basis, and I started asking for God's will to be done in my life and just allow me to show up and just do whatever you would have me do, I've had an entirely different experience in sobriety. Like, I'm talking like, I didn't even think that I wanted what I have, but what I have is better than anything I would have ever wanted for myself. And it's incredible. And I don't know how else better to say that. I'll pass to you, and then we'll move on.
All right. Hi, my name is Nick. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is August 1st, 2017. I have a home group. It is now Friday. Oh, no, it was Friday. No, now it's Candlelight. We meet at 8 o'clock on Collier Avenue. I work with other alcoholics in the program, and I did the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm sober today by the grace of God. That was a really good start. All right, so let me go ahead and qualify for you, though. So I'm the type of alcoholic. Well, I had my first drink at 12. It was my first spiritual awakening. I got drunk on top of a church. So, I mean, like, I could, like, put that together. It's about as close as to God I got. And it's funny because the first time I drank alcoholically. I drank as much as I could until I threw up. My dad picked me up. He threw me in the shower. He asked me if I had a good time. I said yes. I went and played a soccer game, hungover the next day. My mom said, you should probably get drunk more often. You scored 2 goals. So that's how my drinking started out. And my parents are good people, by the way. They didn't. I've never been interested in one of anything. Never been interested in one drink, one drug, one pair of shoes, one shirt. I've always wanted more and more and more. My story deals a lot with drugs or dry goods. We'll keep trying to keep it on alcohol. But it brought me to my knees a lot faster than alcohol would have. Because my drinking was fun. I had a great time. I might have said some things or put my hands on some people I shouldn't have, but you know, it never put me in jail. It never sent me to prison. Like, I got DUI, but I beat it in court. So drinking's not that bad, you know. Maybe I should stop poking myself. You know, that doesn't seem socially acceptable. But I didn't know what an alcoholic was, and it wasn't until I got a sponsor who knew the facts about themselves and that we read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that I found out what it was. And all it is 2 questions. You know, what happens when I drink? Can I just have one? No. Not interested in one. 2, when I stop, can I stay stopped? No, because I have a mind that will constantly get me drunk. So from the beginning that I came into these rooms, I was thoroughly convinced that I was an alcoholic and that alcohol or drugs were not a solution in my life anymore. So what is the solution? Hopefully, you know, we read the big book and find that out. And what that is, that solution is a spiritual one, psychic change. There's a whole bunch of fancy words we can use for it. And I got that through doing the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I get to step 11. Hopefully I've done 1 through 10, hopefully. Some people like to skip around, I've heard. So I get to step 11. I do 3 through 10, which are like very heavily action steps. So I do some things and I get some relief, like Paul just talked about. Like I remember I sat on my 4th step for like 6 months. Yeah. And like I was driving one day and I was just like, I need to check myself into a psych ward. I don't want to drink though, but I'm going crazy. And what happened was I was blocked off from God, and I was unwilling to take those things out of my head so that God could come in. Because that's really what steps 4 through 9 are all about, is getting me out of the way so that God can come into my life and can give me a new one. And once I did my 5th step with my sponsor, I got immediate relief. And then from there, I just continued to do the rest of the simple actions laid out in the steps. And I get to step 11. I mean, you like read it. It sounds good, you know, but I'm not going to do it because I forget. You know, that's my excuse. But, you know, the funny thing is I get to alcohol.
He forgot to.
He forgot. So I get to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I have about the 8-year-old version of God. Like, I was like in a Baptist church, like screaming amen, and had to be taken. And my mom's like, you can't come to the sermon anymore. So like, I know a couple prayers. You know, the best prayer I have is like, if you please get me out of this, God, I swear I'm not gonna do drugs or drink again. Please help. That's about as extensive as my prayer life got. But it was suggested to me that, you know, maybe I get on my knees and I pray not for myself, but for what I could do for other people, and pray that I'm a real alcoholic and just maybe be grateful that God has given me another day sober. And really what step 11 is really about is just inventorying what we've been, you know, what you did 4 and 5 and 7 and 8. Or 6, 7, 8, 9. It's like you're just continuing to do the same thing that you did before. Because when I go to bed, I don't want to go to bed with all this stuff, though. You know, I look at it. You know, do I owe an apology? No. Here, have I been resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Most likely. Do we owe an apology? Most likely. Have we kept something to ourselves? Yes. Were we kind and loving towards all? That's like, I don't know, I think. What could have we done better? Probably a lot. And were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Of course. And, or we think about what we get back into the stream of life. You know, and I like to think that I am trying to do that, but I'm not perfect. I don't pretend to be perfect. And this is what this steps to do. And it's not to beat myself up. It's to really look at it so I can continue to grow. You know, everybody calls these maintenance, 10 and 11 maintenance steps. I am not trying to maintain what I have. Mm-mm. Right, I am trying to continue to become a better person that is more productive so I can be useful to others. And that is what the 12 steps really teach me how to do. Because like Paul already talked about, drinking is a problem in my life, but it is not the problem. And I don't find that out till later as I start reading this book and going through these steps, that the real problem is me. That I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, I'm afraid, and I'm delusional because my reality has been completely warped by alcohol. You know, and I talk myself into a drink every time. Those resentments are what take me back to that drink. That fear is what keeps me in that drink. And me continuing to hurt people gives that self-pity that gives me that excuse to drink. Mm-hmm. And the steps get rid of all that stuff and allow God to come into my life and give me something else to depend on so that I can have a better life and be useful to my fellows.
All right, thank you both. The next reading is on page 86. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still inexperienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we are going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption in all sorts of absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon.
Yep, so as soon as my eyes open, actually, even before my eyes open, I hear the alarm going off in the morning, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm afraid of these 17 things. What am I going to get out of the day?
17.
Yeah, dude, and what do I need to have a good day? What does Paul need? What does Paul want? It's the Paul show on every channel. You can't get away from it. Ah, that's just my default mode, right? And so... when I, you know, if you live like that for your entire life, that is so exhausting. That's all I knew. I didn't know, you know, somebody, so there's a couple things. One, I didn't know that that was going on. I thought that I was planning my day, and I was. I was planning what I needed and wanted and thought and felt, and what do I need to put into place to get what I think I need. And then I just kind of hit the ground and go. And it says I'm always in, what does it say? I'm always in collision.
Yeah.
I'm in insurance, so that makes sense.
Thinking of box.
I'm always in collision with somebody. And so I'm just always, I just, that's how I go through the world. It's just like, I'm on, you know, I'm on my path, and if you're in the way, you're getting steamrolled, or you're going to get in my way and really piss me off. And I didn't know that. I just, for real, I didn't know that I was doing that stuff. I thought I was just a good guy that was getting a bad, you know, a bad beat from the world. I really did have good intentions. And there was a couple of things that happened. You know, I was sober maybe about 7 years. And I, like I said, I was having that really hollow sobriety time. I was helping other people, and I apologize. I was helping other people, and I was doing the thing, and I was reading, and I was calling my sponsor, and I was doing all that stuff. But the one missing piece from this was this kind of idea of growing a relationship with something bigger than myself. It doesn't have to be God. It can be whatever you want it to be. I don't want to lose anybody because we're talking about religion. I'm confirmed Catholic. I haven't been to Catholic Mass in like 11 years. It doesn't matter. We're not talking about religion here. We're not talking about the God of your parents. We're just talking about something bigger than you, right? And, you know, for a long time it was AA. I really poured my beliefs into AA. I believed that it helped a lot of people get sober. I believed it could help me. And I believe that if I just did the steps, most of them, that I would get sober and be relatively happy, right? And so I really believed in the power of AA. That was my higher power for a really long time until it wasn't enough, right? And when I got to that point, I was talking to my sponsor, and we'd been working together for a while, and I was like, man, I just really, I'm like, meh. He's like, about what? And I was like, every damn thing, everything. I'm meh about my family, I'm meh about AA, I'm meh about work. I could not be more meh. And he said, well, what are you doing? And I told him what I was doing, and he goes, okay, well, it's, you know, it sounds completely like you're having zero spiritual growth at all. He's like, well, what are you doing? I was like, come again? He's like, what? He's like, what are you doing to grow spiritually? And I was like, well, I mean, not much. He's like, well, remember when we first started working together and I asked you if you were going to do whatever it took to stay sober and grow, that you said yes. And then I said at that point, the number one thing in your book was to pray every day and every night. Are you doing that? Come again? Right. So he said, okay, so here's the deal. A relationship with a higher power. He's like, Paul, you can't get this thing through osmosis. It doesn't work like that. You can't help a bunch of people and just be good. Like, it doesn't work like that. I'm not in here to save souls. You're in here to grow spiritually yourself, and you will help other people by that growth. And I was like, oh. He's like, all right, so look, a relationship takes two, right? You can't just have a relationship by yourself. You did that, and that was awful. He's like, so what I want you to do is just start praying on your knees every morning and every day and every evening. And so I made a start. I started doing that. I made a commitment to him that I would do that. And the strangest thing happened. I started asking. He was a genie for me for a while. I started asking for what I thought I needed at work. You know, give me the strength to have this hard conversation. And it slowly changed over time to asking just to show up and just to be there for other people. And that really simple thing has helped me so much. Also, a while ago at AA101, I heard something that somebody said, and they said, well, you know, how do you know what God's will is? Mm. And he told this story, right? So I thought my will was just to be a good guy and just show up to work and be successful for my family or whatever. And, you know, God's will, I don't know what that is, but this really helped me wrap my brain around what I'm trying to do on a daily basis. He said, you know, my sponsor gave me a little task. He said, you know, write down all the attributes that God is to you. He's like, okay. So I wrote them all down. I hope it wasn't you.
What happened?
Okay. So I think it might have been Nick that said this. It was really profound. So I'm sorry if I'm stealing your time.
Probably was not.
So he goes, you know, so I wrote down all these things. I wrote kind, loving, patient, tolerant. I wrote all these things down. And then his sponsor said, okay, looks like that's your concept of a higher power. Why don't you go do that? It's probably his will. It was so simple. That is so simple. Even I understand that, right? Like, if I'm praying to be available to do somebody, like, to, you know, I call it God, but to do God's will, it's probably that he just wants me to be kind to other people and treat the people I come across with respect, dignity, and love. I guess I can do that. And so what happens is my prayer and my meditation starts turning towards that. And the craziest thing happens. You know, I've been with my wife for 20 years. We've been together a very long time now. A very long time. And my relationship starts changing with her. I start seeing her as a person, which I know sounds messed up, but a lot of people, I really am just starting to see people in my life. They're not just like people in my life. They have their own life and they're human beings and like they want things and I want to give them things. It's very strange. So anyways, so my life is opening up. I'm starting to see people as individuals, not just people in my life. Oh, I need to wrap it up. Oh, okay.
That's what she
said. And so I start seeing people. I start seeing where I'm wrong easier. I start being open to these feelings of, ooh, I'm pretty sure I just hurt that person's feelings like a lot. I should go make that right immediately. So what the prayer and meditation did, I'm not sitting there for 75 minutes a day. I'm not about to levitate. I don't play music. I don't have a Zen garden. It looks really, really simple. It's a 2-minute thing it's literally 2 minutes. I pray, I take a shower, I do some readings, and then I do this this meditation. I breathe deeply in and out. I breathe in and I say, your will. I hold it and then I breathe it out and I say, not mine. Right? So I'm bringing in that will. I'm getting rid of mine. And since I've been doing that, my life has been different. And I'm not trying to evangelize. I'm just saying that I thought this was garbage and I thought it was throwaway stuff that didn't matter to my program. It's been everything and it's made my life what it is today to the point where I want to be a part of AA. I'm not just going to AA. I'm in this thing and I love it and I friggin' love you people and I love my family and I love people that I work with that piss me off on a daily basis. I'm a different person, one, because of the steps and the fellowship at AA, but I am for real a different person because of this. Step 11, for being garbage, really saved my life. I've been wrong about a lot of things in my life. I was really wrong about step 11. In the beginning.
Is it my turn?
Yeah, did I go long, man?
No,
I'm so sorry,
right,
bro.
Man. I'm cool.
Just keep I was getting excited about this.
The microphone keeps staring at me. But, so Bill Wilson, funny thing, I'm trying to, very unspiritual man, wrote a spiritual book, thank God. Because if he would have been like, sit in a room very quietly and meditate, I can't do that. I wake up, my mind's just like, yep. It just starts going. I've tried to meditate. I did yoga. It was painful. You know, I've tried some different things. It's just not for me. But can I get up and maybe say some simple prayers in the morning? I probably can. It's actually pretty easy. Can I maybe read some devotions? Yeah. And that's on a very personal basis. And when I say God, by the way, it's just a shorter word. You know, I don't claim any religious body. Just so we put that out there. And if you have a problem with that, call your sponsor. So really the funny thing is about like us as human beings, like we spend so much time in the morning on ourselves and not on our brains, right? So like when I, especially me, like I wake up, I have to like match, my socks have to match my underwear, you know what I mean? Everything has to match. So I spend a lot of time matching and like doing my hair. You know, it sounds weird as a man. Thank you so much. So I spend a lot of time on me, but how much time do I spend, you know, on my brain and like praying and meditating and asking God for his will in my life today? And I think that's become a big part of my life because when I find that I don't do that, I'm a little off kilter. Mm-hmm. So, and all Bill's really doing is he's kind of just giving you like an outline of some things that you can do and maybe you can find your own way to do it. He's not really like trying to like give you an exact way. And I've heard some very wild things in Alcoholics Anonymous about prayer and meditation, but I'm gonna keep it to the book. Because it does say, he writes here, after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought out life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. And for me, that's like Paul just talked about. I'm waking up and I'm praying, not for myself, but I'm praying that I can be useful to other people, that I be kind, tolerant, understanding, and then I can be loving. And when, you know, we think about our day and it talks about indecision. So like if there's something in my day that I'm not sure about, you know, instead of like obsessing about it, instead of like just, you know, just pretty much, yeah, obsessing about it and being fearful of it, how about I just continue my day? And I find that when I do that, eventually the answer comes to me just by taking that pause and not worrying about it. I find that I've tapped into a sixth sense, which is God. and that it, he allows me, or she, whatever you want. We get in genders.
Don't go there.
I know. It's 2019. You know, and he gives me inspiration, intuitive thought, or decision. And the thing is, though, is it's allowed me to relax and take it easy on a daily basis at my work. I'm in sales. I am a salesperson. And I sell people that I work with to buy into an idea that maybe I know what I'm doing. I'm not going to talk about it. I don't even know how I was going with that. You know, I got to relax and take it easy. But no, this is where I was going with that. I just remember. So I'm very, a lot of times I'm very relaxed, I'm easygoing, and I have been on multiple occasions asked if I partake in the devil's lettuce. And I'm like, no. They're like, are you sure? And I'm like, yeah, I've been sober since, you know, for a while now. And it's just funny because people are like, well, I don't know, you kind of look it. And I'm like, it's probably because I got some serenity and grace in my life. I'm not running around here like a madman. But I find that what happens, though, is I depend more on God, and I start to do those simple prayers in the morning, that the occasional inspiration, like it talks about, it does become part of my mind. I find that I find answers without searching for them, because I'm seeking them. You know, there's a difference. I'm not trying to find them anymore. I'm not trying to manage them. I'm allowing them to come to me. I'm allowing to, instead of manage a situation, I'm able to relax and just let it play out and see what happens. And the thing is, though, when I find myself managing, and it tells me right here that we may pay for these presumptions and all sorts of absurd actions and ideas, and then I find that I waste a lot of energy on it, and I'm like, I'm exhausted at the end of the day. But as I tend to depend more on my higher power, on God, I find that, like it talks about, it just talked about that those ideas, those decisions I need to make, they present themselves without me ever trying to find them. And I think that it's very important in my life today, because God has done a lot for me today. It has given me a life that if I would have, so it's like we have this, there's like that philosophical discussion of like, well, how does God know what I need? If I would have wrote a list of things that I needed when I first got sober, I would have shorted myself out a whole lot, because God has given me more than I would have ever thought.
Had to drop that devil's lettuce on us, didn't you? All right.
I'm tired.
The next reading is on page 87. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer that we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. We ask especially for freedom from self-will, and are careful to make no requests for ourselves only. We may ask for ourselves, however, if others will be helped. We are careful never to pray for our own selfish ends. Many of us have wasted a lot of time doing that, and it doesn't work. You can easily see why.
So God was a genie for a while, and then I thought I figured it out to where I would pray for him to give me the strength to help my people, knowing at work especially, or in my family, knowing that I just wanted this outcome to happen. So I was asking for the strength to make this outcome that I want happen. And I thought that I got him fooled. And guess what happened? That type of prayer got me into the most horrible, uncomfortable situation at work. I didn't almost lose my job, but man, self-will, guys, here we go, right? Like that, I got into such a weird situation at work that I was a full-on meltdown crisis in my life. It was me running the show again. It was me praying for what I wanted again. It was Paul focusing on Paul. And it was for real. It was an awful experience. And it was embarrassing and ugly. And I took a lot of my self-worth from my position at work. I lived to be the best. And when that was taken from me, it was really embarrassing. It was just bad. So I said it was bad like 13 times. I think you understand how poor the situation was. It was bad. So it was great. It's exactly what I needed, because that is the time where my sponsor started working with a sponsor whose license plate was Step 11. It was the man's license plate. And so my sponsor's just full of Step 11. And I'm like, I don't know what we're doing, but let's do it. And so I was just, like my whole life is, I get beat into submission through my own stupidity and selfishness. Life has a way of just kicking me right in the crotch when it needs to, and I get humbled again so that I can grow, right? But luckily, I'm sober in AA. I'm around you guys. I have friends in the program. I talk to people every day. I'm tied in enough that when stuff gets really weird, I'm not alone, right? Like, that's super important. If you're not on Step 11 or you're not, like, you know, about to levitate, that's okay. All you really got to do is be tied into this thing, because we've all been through this stuff. There's not a single thing in this, a single person in this room that could tell us something that somebody in this room hasn't done before or been through before. It could be the most heinous, crazy thing, and we've all done it. So the thing is that, I mean, guys, we're in an AA meeting. Like, let's get real here. Anyways, the thought of changing that way of life was kind of scary to me because I didn't know how to do that. And my sponsor just simply suggested, why don't you just pray for other people? I was like, what? He's like, I really think he thinks I'm an idiot. But he said, look, man, just pray for other people. And so I started doing that. You know, my wife has a bunch of chronic disorders. Maybe I could pray for her that she gets some relief from that pain. My mom's going through a lot, taking care of her mother. Maybe I could think about her and pray for her so she has strength to help my grandmother. While I had that thought, I should call my grandmother, right? Like, all these things kind of start coming into my mind when I'm focusing out. For years, all I did, I lived in this little 1-inch square in the middle of my forehead. I just thought about me and what I wanted and what I needed. And it wasn't until I started realizing that other people have lives and are going through things that I should maybe pray to be of service to them and help them, that I started really understanding what my purpose is in life, that thing that I've been looking for forever. It's to show up and be a husband. It's to not wait for her to ask me to do stuff. It's to just do it. I'll help you, but you gotta ask me first. No, that's stupid. You know, it's to be selfless with my kids. When they ask me to do something and I don't wanna do it, my reaction is not, oh, I'm busy, daddy's gotta blurp, blurp, blurp. Now it's, yeah, absolutely. You wanna lay in bed with me, daddy? I'd love to, right? Like, that's the person I am now. The guy a couple years ago was like, I can't be bothered. I gotta go make AA calls. Blah, blah, blah. And like, I'm just trudging through life. It's just like walking in thigh deep water. It's the worst. And so when, you know, through the help and guidance of some people in the program and my sponsor and just trying this thing and disciplining myself enough to just try on a daily basis, I've really have seen a huge difference in the quality of my life. I'm not trying to be up here and say I'm perfect. I'm not. But damn, I'm a different human being than I was even a few months ago. I mean, it's really crazy how important this stuff is. I thought it was garbage. I truly thought it was the dumbest thing. And it has turned out to be almost everything. That's what I got.
Oh, it's my turn. Okay. Yeah. I always want to say my name again for some reason. I like hearing it. So, I had to come up with a joke. All right, anyways. So, by getting to this point, right, like, we find that 10 and 11, constant inventorying, right? And, you know, I listen to Joe and Charlie a lot, and Charlie says, you know, I dare you to stay the same when you constantly inventory yourself. It's impossible to be the same person if you are constantly looking at, you know, your part in it, what you did, what it affected, do I owe an amends, and actually making that amends. So that's the great thing about this thing, that I'm going to continuously grow through the process of AA's 12 steps and the simple action. And, you know, so it's just saying maybe I have a prayer that I say, you know, at the end of the meditation. And again, it's just like, I feel like we're like going back over the fact that what all I'm really trying to do is I'm trying to get out of self. I'm trying to ask something greater than myself to give me some guidance. And that when, you know, when I do pray, that I'm not selfish about it, that I'm praying, if it is going to be for me, it's going to be useful to other people. I mean, I have, to be completely honest, I really had stopped praying. I really had just given up on life at a certain point in my alcoholism. And what that looked like for me was I was in an institution for a certain drug charge, and I was in that institution using the drug that had got me there. So I was just kind of like, here we are. This is great. I just want to die. And then I got released. And I just kept doing what I'd already been doing, and I got to a point where I was just ready to kill myself. And the funny thing is that I went to detox with money in my pocket, which is really weird. Never done that before. And I did some different things, and I met some different people who showed me this way of life. So, I mean, I got here, I was thoroughly convinced that I could not do any of this by myself, because I was doing a very bad job at it. And this has just given me structure, you know, having gone through the steps of alcohol, you know, the first 10 steps to do when I wake up in the morning, so that I can continue to do those spiritual principles, which is going to set me up for step 12. Thank you.
All right. Next reading is also on page 87. If circumstances warrant, we ask our wives or friends to join us in morning meditation. If we belong to a religious denomination which requires a definite morning devotion, we attend to that also. If not members of religious bodies, we sometimes select and memorize a few set prayers which emphasize the principles we have been discussing. There are many helpful books also. Suggestions about these may be obtained from one's priest, minister, or rabbi. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer.
Well, I asked my wife to pray with me when I was like a week and a half sober, like actually trying to do the steps. And at this point, I had been a complete lunatic for a year in my dry time. I hadn't drank, but I'm pretty sure she wanted to kill me. And my sponsor said, you know, maybe you ask your wife to pray with you. I did it. I'm not going to repeat the words that she said to me, because it would be inappropriate if children listen to this. It was just terrible timing. Right? Like, I got caught on this religious, like, I'm going to be a good person, and this is what it's all about. This is not about being a good person in AA, right? Like, AA is set up to help you stop drinking and stay stopped drinking. The result, though, is that I become a completely different person when I'm doing these things and living these principles that Nick was talking about. I become a different person, and my life just generally goes better. That doesn't mean I'm a better person. I still have horrible thoughts. And I am incredibly selfish as a default. That's just what it is. But, you know, I think one of the things that... I'm not going to touch the religious thing with a 10-foot pole, because I just don't care. It's just, I just don't care about it. And I know we're in a church, and I appreciate them having us. The thing is, though, is that I'm that guy that just knows that I'm always right. And I know that you're not. Right, so when I think about religious people, this little phrase at the very, very end, you know, is like, be quick to see where religious people are right and make use of what they have to offer. I think about that often. And it's not the one that, well, anyways, I'm not going to digress. What I do think about, though, is I had a neighbor named Mr. Smith, nicest Christian man I've ever met in my entire life, just a truly genuine person. And my active alcoholism as a teenager, I had asked the person at this Catholic school that I was going to, I asked the janitor, I was like, hey, I'll pay you $150.
What?
Yeah. I'll pay you $150. When school's out, go to all the lockers, clear the books out, I'm going to resell them, and I'll hit you back with some more money afterwards, right? Because we had to buy our books. So I'm being a conniving idiot.
That was smart.
I made a lot of money. But, so I go down to this gentleman's house, and I say, Mr. Smith, may I please borrow a dolly? And he goes, oh, sure, brother. He's like this old, just southern man from West Virginia. He's in the army for like 90 years. He goes, oh, sure, brother. I'll help you out. He disappears. I'm like, where are you going? He comes back and he hands me a dollar. And he goes, are you sure this is all you need? I'll give you anything that you want. I was like, no, I need your hand cart. In my mind, I was like, no, I need your hand cart so I can sell these books illegally and make my money. And
did you keep the dollar?
I gave it back to him. And so,
sorry.
So anyways, my point in saying this is that man was just kind of giving of himself. And that's what I think about often, right? I think about this guy who selflessly would have done anything for me, man, that's a good dude. So I you know, I don't get caught up in religion. I don't want to start like, ah, I don't believe in the dogma of this. It doesn't matter what I believe. It doesn't matter what you believe. All that it matters is that some of these principles are in the book. I mean, this, a lot of this is based in like Christian and Buddhist teachings, right? Like a lot of this is very similar. It's treat people well. I mean, like it's a lot of it's in here already. So I don't have to complicate it and be like, oh, I was raised Baptist and I don't want to turk. It doesn't matter. This is a program of action. It's laid out in 1 through 12. If you do the steps and then you try to just be better by growing spiritually, you're going to realize that a lot of this is just baked into the cake. It's just already in here. All I got to do is just not be a closed-off idiot like I was for years and years and years.
That's it. All right. So it says that I never had a wife. I barely even had a successful relationship in
not
my
yet.
Life. Even in sobriety. Still not there yet. We're working on it. Don't have many people to have a morning meditation with. I got my cat though, you know. Yeah, so I guess I could ask her. I might do that. I don't. So again, like the religious thing gets real weird. Like I've read a lot of books to like detest religion. That's like the type of person I was. But you know, I was really an agnostic. I always believed in something. I just wasn't sure what it was. And all agnostic means is that I had a lack of knowledge. So I didn't know who God was, and the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous gave me a relationship with God. And the funny thing is, my sponsor, I had this huge resentment against Christians. Like, it was like on my fourth, it was like the fifth thing on my fourth step, you know, Christians. And sponsor, so he go through, like, what did the effect? Like, my self-esteem, you know. My security. They told me I'm going to hell. You know what I mean? Like, whatever. And really, it is none of my business what they're doing. Because actually, he said, do you think they're living their life a little better than you? And I was like, yeah, probably. They probably weren't stealing from people. You know, and they probably weren't lying. Well, I don't know. They probably do. It's none of my business if they do that. But anyways, the point was, is that like majority of them were living a good life. And I was like, you know what? I can kind of get with that. And the funny thing is I find that what I have the ability to do today is have an open mind and perception to things that I read. It doesn't have to be right or wrong. And then, like, I find Alcoholics Anonymous in many things. Like, many. I've read some philosophical books. I've read some motivational books. And I find AA in them. Because it's the simple. It's the two rules. Like, love God, right? Whoever God is. And just love thy neighbor, which is just love your fellow man. And I find that those are actually pretty easy to withhold. I don't have a hard time doing that today. That's all I got.
All right. The last reading starts also on page 87. As we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show, humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, "Thy will be done." We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. It works. It really does. And then on page 88, we alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12.
And that's an amazing little paragraph right there. A little paragraph and a half. it is. So, I don't know about you guys, but I have like a hair trigger anger situation. It doesn't come out like it used to, but I am in an instant rage the second somebody questions me. Somebody tells me I'm not doing something right, or they think that I should be doing something differently. I immediately, like I lose it. And one of the greatest things, I love what you were saying. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I did love it when you said it. It was about just kind of this, my reaction to life is different. It was a couple of things. Yeah. So it's really, really interesting. I've learned a few things over time, and I know we're running out of time, so I'll keep it short. One, my first thought or reaction to a situation, always wrong. It's always wrong. It's just always wrong. It's a selfish, fear-based reaction. I'm a reptile. My first reaction to something is wrong. Yeah, exactly. My second reaction, generally not true and wrong as well. My third thought or action on a situation is maybe closer to being right. And what I mean by that is I used to be just a straight wire. Now there's kind of like this built-in disconnect between my reaction and my thought about what I should do. To the point where I feel more in control of myself because I'm not just lashing out and being a loudmouth idiot. You know, I always want to be Robert Redford in The Natural. Like, that's my, if you haven't seen the movie, it's great, but that's what my mind goes to. I'm Robert Redford in the Natural. Really, I'm just a Joe Pesci, loudmouth, just high-pitched voice lunatic, and that's usually what comes out, and it's ugly. I don't want to be that guy anymore. It's embarrassing. Also, by this time, I don't want to make amends to people on a daily basis because that's tiring. I just want to treat people better. And so, you know, I really have, as I've practiced this over time, realized that my reaction to life is completely different. Even just this weekend, I had to work Saturday. I laughed real loud, and I swear I felt like I ran. I told him this story yesterday. I laughed so loudly. I work in a call center that one of my agents, I was sitting in the middle of the section to try and be with them more instead of just up at my desk. And the girl goes, "See, that's the problem with you sitting here. You laugh so damn loud that my customer's thinking that we're having a party and a blurp, 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 and a blurp." And I was like, "Oh, I'm sorry. That's the sound of joy. I think I've heard you say that before." And anyways, I had this experience and she called me out in front of people. And my biggest thing that makes me lose my mind is being called out in front of people, especially subordinates. Oh boy. Guess what I did? Nothing. She's like, she said, "Why are you so sensitive?" I'm like, "Well, I'm not sensitive. That was a pretty ugly thing that you said to me for no reason, and I just don't appreciate it. I'm just trying to be better as a boss." So that's weird. And she turned around and had an attitude, and an hour later I continued to coach her and help her. Before, I would have turned my back on her. I would have texted a bunch of people at work about her. I would have told everybody what a jerk she was. I would have worked myself up into a froth over somebody just being annoyed for a second. I would have lost 2 days of my life over this chick's one statement. But what has happened is, I know. First thought, wrong. Second thought, probably wrong. Third thought, maybe. Let's sit on it for a second. And I have a built-in disconnect now that I think is God's grace coming in and just saying, "Hey, man, these people are sick. You're sick. You're no better than. Why don't you just shut up?" And that's nice.
All right. He has really good vocabulary words. I've noticed. Like, they are really good. So I want to read something right here. It says, now this is funny though, like, who doesn't like danger, you know, and excitement, you know what I mean, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, like, I like really like those things. Those things allow me to do things that I justify and want to do, you know. They allow me to be, you know, angry, which anger is fun sometimes, you know. I can act like I don't know, you know what I mean, or I can have this, you know, I'm justifying my fear. I'm allowed to be worried. I love my self-pity. And the funny thing is, I sat in these things for years, so I'm very comfortable in them. So now, like, you know, Bill's like, "Maybe we should take a pause." Like, who wants to pause? Like, you disrespected me. We're going to straighten it right now. I am very significant. Do you know who I am? You know, I am no one. You know, it's the funny thing. It's like I have this, like, this self-image that doesn't exist, only in my mind. That's what we call delusional. And I have to constantly remind myself of this, like, on a daily basis. Like, today, this girl's response to me at work, again, you know, an insubordinate, and she said something, and I was like, what did you say? Excuse me? I'm, like, following her. I can't hear you. Like, I want you to turn around and have a confrontation with me. And she refused to do it. You know, and the funny thing is, she came back by, and then I made amends, like you said. It's just, it's very painful. But it ends up being worth it in the long run, you know. And what I find, though, is that I don't do that as much, and I become way more efficient. The only place that I really act crazy is probably driving still, and I'm completely okay with it because I'm by myself, and they can't hear me through the windows. And it doesn't tire me. It keeps me going. But the funny thing is like, as really when you go through this book, all it's really asking me to do is just get out of the way and help people. I feel like from like the preface on, that's really all it's talking about is being useful to other people, you know, alcoholics and non-alcoholics as well, and just getting out of the way. I mean, all the way from page, blank page, all the way to the 164th page, just asking us to be useful to other people. Because, and the thing is, though, we talked about earlier in the book, you know, that I'm the actor, the director, I'm trying to run the show. I'm trying to arrange life so it's perfect. And that's what's really driving me crazy, and I do a really bad job at it. I mean, I did. I don't know about you guys. You are in an AA meeting, so that tells you something. And I find that when I start to depend on God, it does work. And it tells me that. And the funny thing is alcoholics, we're undisciplined. We're going to make mistakes. No one's perfect. But what we try to do, we try to let God take control and show us the right direction to take. And I like, you know, at the end of this, though, it says, you know, there's action and more action. So it doesn't stop here. Like, this doesn't just stop with me. This is just the beginning so that I can be useful to the still suffering alcoholic, which they're going to talk about in step 12, so that I can give the message that was given to me freely, and it can continue to carry on, and I can continue to gain freedom from this bondage of self that alcohol has encompassed me in. And, you know, faith without works is dead, and I love that quote, even though it is from the book of James. Because I find that true today, that you know, like, if I don't take any action, like, I can pray, but if I do not put the action, if I do not put my feet in front of one, in front of the other, and go and do what I want, you know, in God's will, that it'll never happen. You know, the difference between being thankful and grateful. Thankful is like you're at Thanksgiving, you're like, oh, thanks, it was great. Grateful is the guy that gets up and washes the dishes even though he doesn't want to. You know, that's how it was presented to me. Gratitude is an action today. And, you know, I have to have that in my life so that I can carry this message on. Because there's days I don't want to be here. You know, I could be doing something way cooler. Probably not, but this got me out of work early. But, you know, I can become very quickly unsatisfied with Alcoholics Anonymous. In that, is this all that this is? You know, but it gave me this wonderful life. I can become real selfish real quick. And what step 11 allows me to do is to look at those things, get that stuff out of my head so that I can just, you know, practice these principles in all my affairs and stick my hand out to that newcomer and show them that they, you know, there's a new way of life and they don't have to do it alone. Thanks for letting me share.
All right, let's thank our panel. To pass the seventh tradition baskets. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any AA-related announcements aside from the one I have? Oh, wait, Iran has one back there.
January 5th is going to have their anniversary, our 8th anniversary. Come out and join us. We'll be brunch starting at 10 o'clock, then we'll be baking. Mm-hmm. And then at 11 o'clock, we'll be speaker. And we are absolutely glad to have you as a member of the hospital. So get attention.
You know it's November, right?
I don't know food.
But there's going to be bacon. It's important.
So also, another awesome event is happening right here in this room on Monday, December 9th. We are going to be having a supper and a speaker. Woo! Yeah, I know, right? Everybody gets stoked. All right. It's super awesome if you've never been. I know a lot of you have. 6 p.m. is a potluck. Bring a dish if you wish. If not, bring yourself. And 7 o'clock is going to be a speaker, and the speaker is Charlie C. from Arlington, Virginia. Again, that is Monday, December 9th, right here in this room at 6 p.m. No more announcements? All right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Will all home group members please raise their hands? All right. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. If you'd like to introduce yourself.
My name's Corey.
Hey, Corey. Welcome.
All right. Literature is available to my left, your right. Please see a home group member after the meeting if you would like to purchase a book. The pamphlets are free. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available right here at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me. Reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. In closing, let's thank the panel one more time. All right. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del Sol, 22nd and Colonial, right before the train tracks. Yeah, I know. I couldn't think of anything, you know, awesome on the spot today. So do I have a volunteer to read the last two paragraphs on page 164, Kendra?
Yeah. Our book is meant to be suggestive only to realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answer will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right, we have a nice way of closing.
You guys have awards for me?
Yeah.
All right, Jerome.
All right.
Just so you know.
Okay. Okay, that's it.
Our Father.
Our Father.
Who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread. And forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us.